Hello, and welcome to another episode of the WFM show with special guests from Forrester, Nancy Brooks and Betsy Summers. Thank you both for joining me today. For the first half of the show, we will break down the content of the Total Economic Impact Report Forrester created for Quinyx with Nancy. And then during the second half, we will explore our learnings in the context of the broader market with Betsy. So Nancy, let's start with you. You conducted the research and the interviews to create the Total Economic Impact Report for Quinyx. And before we dig into all of the juicy details, can you explain on a high level why the TEI report is a valuable resource for prospective customers?
Sure. I think anytime you're looking to make a major technology investment for your business, there's a lot of inputs you want to consider. IT costs versus cost savings, any efficiency gains you expect, how effective you think it'll be on your business processes, scalability, just to name a few. So as someone who is attempting to put together that business case, how do you get your arms around all of these variables? And the other question is, how can you leverage third-party business value case studies to really apply to your business when so often those case studies are about someone else's experience with the product? So, you know, that's kind of where Forrester comes into play here. Our TEI, Total Economic Impact Studies, a consistent process that combines the numbers, the ROI equation, so that you can get a quick takeaway, as well as a lot of discussion around flexibility factors, variability factors, different ways that results may vary depending on your industry, the size of your business, your maturity, so on and so forth. So in that process, we start by talking with customers who have utilized the product. So in this case, we spoke with four Quinyx customers located around the world in various industries. And then from all of that input and data, we create a composite organization, which is a hypothetical organization that represents what we all feel is a typical target customer for the product. So that composite organization allows us to put together one financial model on one company that can quickly and easily communicate that ROI equation, the key metrics, and so forth. And then from there, as I mentioned, we discuss those variability factors that might influence different businesses in different industries. And we show all the math so a reader can easily access the drivers and figure out how it best applies to their business.
Nice. And we'll dig into that math in a bit. But first, let's walk through the problems that the customers are trying to solve by implementing Quinyx. What are some of the major pain points in your view that stick out from the interviews and such?
Sure. Well, customers talked about a number of pain points. One being employee communication was very cumbersome, whether it was back loops between managers and employees, an all company message that needed to get out quickly, and shift swaps that happen all the time when a schedule is released. Then there were so many manual processes that were time consuming and also highly error prone. For example, several of the interviewees talked about not having a link between their scheduling and time attestation systems and their payroll system. So somebody had to manually, you know, tally up the hours and then input that information into yet another system. So there were a lot of errors associated with that. Reporting was cumbersome, limited insight into business demand. And they wanted a solution that could solve all of these problems and sort of connect them together into one unified system.
Yeah. And the results of that report are really impressive. I've been in the space for many years myself. One of the things that sticks out to me also is they're very believable. 376% ROI, 50% reduction in overtime, and 3.67 million in net present value gained by our customers, or that composite customer that you talked about. How were you able to uncover these results? Can you dig into that process a bit for me?
Sure. So first, it's worth noting a couple of the characteristics of the composite organization. As I mentioned, the interviewees were in all different industries. We built our financial model around a large retailer with 260 stores, 3,900 employees, and 3,600 of those employees being hourly. And there are a couple of more specifics in the report. So by, you know, kind of scaling and mapping the data we heard from the four customers to that profile, we came up with the ROI, which is, you know, obviously coming from weighing the benefits versus the costs. The four benefit categories that we identified were manager time savings on time reporting and payroll, frontline worker time savings on the same process, labor forecasting accuracy, and overtime reduction. And we found the biggest drivers there were manager time savings and overtime reduction. Quick note on the cost side, the inputs were obviously the cost of the Quinyx software, any third-party implementation costs, change management processes, and so on, and the modest cost of offering some ongoing support and mentorship to the managers as they kind of learned the system.
And during one of your interviews, one of our customers mentioned the importance of using the Quinyx app, and I'll quote, "We wanted our sales associates to have an app with which they could show interest in shifts and change shifts with each other. So a big factor was the Quinyx app is easy on the eye and a very modern feel that makes you want to use it," end quote. Can you share any insights about the adoption rate of the app in your findings?
Sure. Well, obviously, the higher the adoption rate, the more successful, the more beneficial the product is going to be. All the interview customers talked about the importance of a user-friendly UX, and they all found that with Quinyx. One organization talked about their initial implementation of Quinyx on a department of 400 people. At that time, which was several years back, they said it changed the culture of their organization and really moved people from a paper-based environment to app-based. Nowadays, of course, the implementation story is a little bit different. It's more about meeting employees where they are, because if you don't provide tools that they like to use, they're going to find their own. For example, one interview we talked about employees swapping shifts with each other over a Facebook group that was not sanctioned by the company. So it's important to give employees tools that they're used to using, that they're comfortable with, that they enjoy, that'll make their jobs easier, or, you know, like I said, they will come up with their own solutions. So Quinyx is a great tool in that toolbox.
Yeah, well said. So based on some conversations we've had recently at the National Retail Federation in January and other events and industry news, it seems that in 2023, there's a big emphasis on doing more with less. How would you say Quinyx has been able to assist our customers to do just that?
Well, I think the best technology investments are those that not only help you complete your routine tasks more quickly, but also add some productivity value to the process and allow the business to become more productive. So in this case, the solution helps employees and managers reduce the friction around creating and optimizing schedules. And it's that optimization process that really helps the business align the right employees in the right place at the right time based on customer demand, whether that's measured through footfall, sales, units sold, and so on. So Quinyx really helped businesses unlock that data that they already had and really bring down the biggest cost driver of a business, which tends to be labor. And finally, it's worth noting that because of Quinyx's user-friendly communications module within the same package, a business isn't investing in multiple technology solutions to do all the things or switching from screen to screen, but you know, everything is in one package, which is certainly a hallmark of being efficient with your investments.
Yes, no doubt. Yeah, very important point. We see a lot of businesses having so many apps to switch between and having all of that in one place and literally not having to switch apps at all is such a great selling point for us. So Nancy, appreciate you digging into the details with us. Wonderful to have you on the show, and really appreciate all the effort that you put into the interviews and the construction of the total economic impact report for Quinyx.
Excellent. Well, it was a fun project. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy. Yeah. And Betsy, pivoting to you, the last time you and I sat down together, we talked in depth about workforce trends for 2022, now a year gone. Employee engagement and retention emerged as the huge focus for future success. Would you say those trends are still relevant now? And if so, what are some new factors that should be considered?
Gone are those days, right? I mean, it's the pace of change right now is just incredible. I think, too, it is funny how much that the tight talent market and the labor market really forced companies and organizations to recognize the importance of attracting and retaining their employees and really treating them as assets to be invested in over time. If anything, the job market now is quite strong in the U.S. with the lowest unemployment in 50 years, although there's high variability across industries. And it's quite confusing. I think the change is twofold. One, there's the receding fears of the pandemic. And also from what I've heard from clients, they just don't want to talk about that anymore. They want to leave a lot of that trauma behind. They want to get moving to the future and really understand what it's going to take for the next 5-10 years. The second is the economic uncertainty. I think that has really cast a pall over what organizations are doing from an employee investment standpoint, because they're having to do more with less, as you said, and they are really having to tighten up those business cases for any types of investments in employee engagement and employee experience that we know are important, but rather we have to translate those into what's good for the business and what's good for employees. We know that when employees are engaged, they give more to the business and they tend to stay longer. So you can see this in our data. We have three impacts here on an organization, that those employees who are higher engaged, they report more productivity, higher intent to stay, and more pride in their company. And so they tend to give more and get more from their work when they are engaged, which is ultimately a benefit that we want companies to see.
Absolutely. And companies, obviously based on the data, should want to see it. And you've done so much research in this area. And my question for you is, where have you seen organizations miss the mark? Because, you know, obviously we've dug into how do they make the mark, but how do they miss it?
Yeah, this is a great question. And usually it comes down to two things. One is that they have a very limited understanding of what employee experience actually is, or what all the factors are that contribute to it. So we at Forrester tend to see employee experience as very expansive and psychological in nature, that employee experience is the sum of all perceptions that employees have working inside their organizations every day. So that includes, but is more than, the employee life cycle, big moments like onboarding or promotion or performance reviews. It includes the technology they use. Are they able to be productive in their work, or is just doing their job super frustrating? They can't find what they need. They can't access the information they need. It also includes the relationships that they have with their colleagues and their managers. So it is quite expansive and is quite holistic. We also use engagement to put a sentiment metric to experience, right? So it's difficult to quantify what an employee experience is, but we use engagement as a metric to help measure that. And of course, engagement is validated through research. And we also know that leaders have influence over engagement, of course. So the slide is showing the top 10 ways that companies can influence engagement. And there are levers across the span, right? The second factor that organizations typically get wrong is that they think engagement results from some kind of like perks and benefits, like the kind of pizza party example that we tend to use. But really what we see is that managers and leaders can make an impact on engagement through really improving their environment, improving the technology, making sure that people feel respected, in control, productive, and fairly compensated.
And what are the risks that companies face if they don't get it right? Like, what are the results of not getting it right?
This comes up a lot too with just, I mean, it all comes down to money, right? That turnover costs a ton of money. Also, decreased customer satisfaction, especially if you're not able to meet customer demands due to your high attrition rates. Replacement costs for staff can run anywhere from half to twice the salary of a lost employee. We also see that there are detrimental effects to bad environments for workers, that stress leads to a lot of lost workdays during the year. And we also see that burnout can really take a toll on workers' productivity and performance. And actually, experiencing burnout leads to a 2.6 times more likeliness or likelihood to actually leave that employer. So there's a lot of benefit for employers to actually invest more in engagement and wellness for their employees.
Absolutely. And technology plays a role in that, in improving that employee experience, allowing flexible scheduling, creating more opportunities for workers to be recognized. Can you speak to the areas where tech can be a hindrance or even create friction?
Technology plays a really big part with employee engagement and employee experience overall, right? We want to be productive in our daily work. We don't want to be frustrated. We don't want to come across these kind of friction-full types of tasks, right? Where it's really, really hard to clock in, or you have to go into several different apps to get something done, or like multiple hangups in the technology that we use. We want things to be intuitive. We want things to be seamless and easy. And we know from studies that we've done in the past that an overwhelming majority, so 80% of decision makers in one study across industries wanted to leverage technology to improve the frontline experience, but they struggle with prioritizing those kinds of investments. And 71% of them actually worried that the investments in technology that improve process and efficiency was actually taking more precedence over the technology that ultimately could create a better frontline employee experience. So basically, it was that the technology that actually could make frontline workers' experience more palatable and improve that experience was actually deprioritized within the organization because they wanted to invest in maybe operational or back-end software that wasn't directly for the frontline experience. So there is sometimes a perception that it's an either-or scenario. Of course, the best case scenario is that you have technology that serves both the back-end in terms of operational efficiency and the front-end in terms of performance and productivity.
So when it comes to retention, I believe that we're far more aware of what makes people stay, providing flexibility, giving recognition, as we've all mentioned before, but also creating opportunities for career advancement, upskilling, some of the stuff that is contained in all of WFM, HCM, learning management. What can sometimes remain unclear, and what I'd like you to help the audience understand, is how does tech specifically enable that?
Technology, of course, is a really, really important tool for this. Technology helps you understand what needs to improve because of those communication channels it enables, and then also scaling the how, like whatever you discover and then scaling it. So on the slide, you can see lots of different ways that employee insights can be gathered in a particular tool through feedback, listening, sentiment analysis, survey technology, any kind of communication platform, so that we get this feedback from employees, we can aggregate it at scale because of technology, and then it shows leaders what they need to focus on and how they can actually translate that into action. So then with the how, technology can facilitate that, can enable that. You're not going to be able to tell every single manager and your employee, hey, change the way that you're doing this by having one-on-one conversations with them. No, you're going to use technology to scale those changes. So maybe your surveys highlight the need for career pathing or more flexibility with scheduling. And with analysis, you can see that those are the top issues that drive attrition, right? So those challenges and points of friction in EX can be totally or partially solved through technology. So that's how we really want organizations to leverage it.
Absolutely. Makes sense. Last time we touched on some non-strategic levers, knee-jerk reactions, I think you called them. And I agree that organizations employ to increase retention, comp, one-time bonuses, et cetera. So since that conversation, there have been examples of more and more companies that have invested heavily in strategic levers like career growth, providing timely feedback. Why are those approaches more successful?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I do also want to say that compensation is absolutely a driver in that you need to remain a competitive employer, but it is not going to make people stay. Compensation is not an effective motivator and certainly not a driver for engagement. It's an ephemeral solution. So you might raise your rates, but then your competitor will raise rates and then there's no loyalty there anyway. So it's compensation is valuable, but not as valuable as other retention levers. So more sustainable and mutually beneficial strategies, that's what we're looking for, that enable productivity, retention, and compliance. These are long-term gains we're talking about as well. So as you can see on the slide, there are lots of different organizations in different industries trying to provide a better set of total rewards and benefits. And that is absolutely a great place to start. They should be supporting and enabling their employees much better when it comes to paid time off, the contributions to 401ks, better benefits, et cetera. But we also want employers to have an employee experience strategy that goes beyond their total rewards to address the technology they're using, as we've talked about, to address the kind of occasion for feedback and the relationship between managers and employees, to give them a voice, to help them feel seen, to be recognized. And so it is important for organizations to look across all of the things that they're offering for employee experience and be more holistic in the way that they think about employee experience and how they connect it to engagement and retention.
Absolutely. And as WFM is a part of this technology ecosystem, and as we zoom in on WFM in particular, can you expand upon which elements of WFM really move the needle toward creating business success?
At a high level, we need any type of technology, especially that employees use all the time, to be future fit. And that's what we call at Forrester. That's our model that entails adaptability, resilience, and creativity. And so that means, in terms of technology, there needs to be flexibility. It needs to be cloud-based. There must be modern architecture. It needs to be intuitive, seamless, easy to use. It meets users where they are. It's secure and configurable. We want something that will stand the test of time, but that will flex and change as we need it. That's the essence of future fit. Then we look to specific capabilities. So we want to release managers from the tedium of managing all of the schedules all the time and just, you know, back in the office trying to fit people in slots everywhere, and give workers an easy way to ask for time off, put in schedule change requests, help them do anything and everything in one easy to use app, right? As Nancy was mentioning, you know, this use of like a Facebook group or a, you know, WeChat and all these other communication channels to manage their own schedule, because they can't do so in the app. So they have to, you know, go outside the app to do that. We want them to be productive. We want them to stay engaged with their work. And so we need to reduce the amount of manual effort it's taking to actually do that. So we need AI to support us. We need communication to be built into the app. And we need really high quality analytics so that managers and the organization at large can see the trends and make adjustments as necessary. We're seeing a lot more capabilities in the space more broadly around workforce management in support of employee experience for the frontline. And so we're seeing from vendors like you and others a lot more interest and investment in employee experience, engagement, having survey technology, communication and feedback, more intuitive tools, training, skills, intelligence, et cetera, to really optimize scheduling. So the good news is that we are at least seeing those trends move in the right direction that align to both organizational needs and also employee experience.
The point that I was about to make halfway through, and I appreciate you continuing, is communication directly connected to schedule is a great example that I've always used as one where two separate elements connected together is better than the sum of the two, because you end up with so much time saved in terms of friction that would ordinarily take place if you had the two disconnected. As they are connected, communication about the schedule and then communication outside of the schedule, both together in one app, is extremely, extremely effective. Are you seeing that? I assume you are, but I believe you're seeing that trend more and more.
What I love about what you said as well is that there is an element of that 1+1=3. So beyond the just the kind of effort and the saving time and saving effort from switching app to app, there is also the added bonus of that voice being heard element, right? That you are able to communicate about your work and about your shift and your schedule, which is how you know when to show up for work. It's super, super important. But basically, your voice being heard, that there is a channel for that, and that people are on the other side reading what you have to say and listening to it. And that actually matters a ton, especially when you get into higher levels around survey technology and understanding sentiment and recognizing people for their contributions. All of this adds up to higher engagement, which again, we have seen contributes to more pride in their work, more intent to stay, and also more productivity too. We also have research too that connects engagement and employee experience with customer experience and customer satisfaction. Now it depends, there's high variability depending on exactly what you're doing to enable employees, for sure. But we do see that higher engaged employees do put more discretionary effort into their work with customers, and that usually results in a higher client satisfaction or customer satisfaction rate. So for companies who do measure the two, that is really, really important for them to see that connection between customer satisfaction and customer experience and employee experience and employee satisfaction. Like, what are they doing to enable the connection between the two?
So, Bessie, WFM as a market is growing quite a bit. And you've seen this, I've seen this right before our eyes. But what are some of the drivers in your mind for this trend?
So there are two things that come to mind, but one specifically is just what leaders learned during the pandemic. I think that a lot of leaders were struck with how antiquated and outdated their workforce technology, especially their workforce management technology, was. It could not deal with some of the changes that they needed to make midstream, mid-pandemic. And so that led a lot of leaders to really question the modernity of their HR tech stack. It's like, what tools are we actually using? I mean, we all saw what happened with the fallout with Southwest. I mean, that wasn't pandemic related, but it certainly was indicative of the same trend of this kind of antiquated software that you kind of get okay with what you're used to over time until something comes along and tests it so much that it breaks it. And that's what the pandemic did to a lot of this technology. So we've been talking to a lot of leaders looking for more modern solutions to replace their legacy systems that, as they've looked closer at it, it just is not up to par with the capabilities they want to deliver, or even just the look and feel of the product is not what they wanted to represent their brand to their employees. Not to mention, of course, the lack of analytics, the difficulty with integrations, the lack of certain capabilities that actually, you know, that kind of switching from app to app to do things. A lot of the tools they were using weren't very, very flexible. And so they really wanted to go to market. So that need for workforce agility and being able to really be more flexible with your workforce and having a tool that can handle those requirements, that's really what is driving a lot of people back to the market to see what is new, what's valuable out there, what are the newer capabilities that I could actually take advantage of in the market.
Yeah, and one that has been on the market for a while now is AI and optimization. Mm-hmm. And what strikes me about what you're saying is that oftentimes we're relying on humans to react to those stress situations, yeah. Whereas AI and optimization actually is much more adaptable to that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So leveraging AI and optimization in the background, combined with the modernity of a front end that is desirable, is a 1-2 punch for a lot of these folks.
Yeah. Organizations have to grapple with the fact that HR typically is not very savvy about artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. They're not very confident in their own capability to use or manage it. And so there usually has to be a lot more education and support that vendors have to provide to help people understand how to leverage AI ethically and responsibly and with transparency, because HR can benefit a lot from AI, but they just don't know enough. So that lack of understanding translates to fear, et cetera, even though, as the organizations we've surveyed report that AI has made a positive impact on their organization, 75% of respondents say that. And so it is, I think, a lesson for HR to also modernize themselves or think about what are the capabilities that I'm not understanding correctly and what are the things that I actually need to upskill myself and my team on.
Betsy, thank you so much for your time today. And Nancy as well, thank you for joining us. Always fun to sit down and talk with you and hear your passion for this subject as well. And we very much appreciate it here at Quinyx. So thank you very much.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you.